Hello, and thank you so much for checking out this episode of Promote the Hell Out of It. I've been really excited to release this. I had the absolute pleasure of talking to the amazing Kelly Kemp a couple of weeks ago now, and we had the kind of conversation that I really want to be having on this podcast. We talked about so much stuff, including why cooperatives are something to really research and get involved with. We talk about how she is co-chair for the Kurdistan Solidarity branch in Portsmouth. We also talk about healthy eating when you're on tour, and we talk about the idea of intermittent fasting and how that's helped her out, and also a little bit about all the amazing music she's involved in. We talk about her solo stuff and why she's sort of slowed down a bit with that, and we also talk about the new project that she's really involved with, which is the Hip Eyes, which has also got Rue and Hamish from Bangers, and they're releasing some new material soon, which would be incredible if you checked out. The material they've got out so far is amazing. I would really recommend checking out the album I Just Want to Float in the Void, or the EP I Just Want to Float in the Void, which way that they released through Caroline Records. And yeah, it's an amazing conversation. And if you do enjoy this, I would absolutely recommend checking out episode 1 and 2 of the podcast, where I talked to Sean McGowan from Southampton, another really good musician who's recently toured with the likes of The Levellers, Billy Bragg, and he's just been doing a full band tour of the UK as this comes out. So I think he's up north at the moment. And then in episode 2, I talked to Sarah Lucas, who is also known as Hello the Mushroom. She's an incredible street artist who's been involved in some amazing stuff. So yeah, I'm going to play you a teaser from the Hip Eyes, so that you kind of get a taster for their music, and then I will jump right into the conversation with Kelly Kemp. I'm ready for the pressure to rise. I'm ready for the pressure to rise. And I hate waking for folks to make the way in. I'm so impatient. So how have you been, Kelly?
Yes, all good. I have been working, doing some music, doing not a lot of surfing, but hopefully that'll change. And that's it. That's my life.
Ah, that sounds perfect. The surf must be pretty cold right about now, though.
Yeah,
right?
And I've been like, I should just brave it and go in, but I have not. I'm just out for the winter.
I'm not entirely surprised, and with the amount that you do, like with work and music and everything, finding time to surf is like incredibly inspiring. I find it difficult just to go for a run or whatever. So it's been a long time since I've managed to dunk in the sea and go for a surf.
Oh yeah, I actually got in the sea on New Year's Day, not for surfing, but I just swimming costumed up and in I went, because I thought if I get out on the first day of the year, then it's all uphill from there.
It's a good start. The last time I did anything like that was on New Year's Eve, actually, but I was just as a dare, and I was freezing cold and was so sure that I was going to get ill, because I've never been so cold in my life. So I don't think I'll be doing that anytime soon.
Where did you go in?
I think it was in Bournemouth, like next to Bournemouth Pier, and it must have been, 14 years ago now. So yeah, it's been that long since I've done anything like that.
And how were your travels?
Amazing. So we did 8 months in Southeast Asia, which was incredible but very tiring. And then a 25-hour journey back to Barcelona, where we're going to be for 10 days. So yeah, it's good. But I'm very bored of my backpack now.
I
was very bored of the same clothes for 8 months.
Are you going to stay in Barcelona?
No, we're doing 10 days here, and then we're going over to the UK, where we're house sitting for an entire year to save on rent. So moving around the UK, and I can gig and not pay rent by looking after people's pets.
Oh, brilliant.
I know, right? So we get all the puppies and all the kittens, and it's going to be incredible.
That sounds great. I'll be looking on Instagram for cute cat pics.
Absolutely. And we should be near Portsmouth at some point, so I'm sure we'll get to see you face to face.
Come visit sunny South Sea.
Absolutely. I definitely want to check Wild Thyme Whole Foods out, which is obviously part of what I want to talk to you about today, because it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you is what did you get interested in first? Was it music or the food side of things or the politics side of things? What came first?
Music, definitely. Just from a really, really young age, just made up songs. I don't really know where it came from. Neither of my parents are musical. My grandparents, or like my mother's side of the family, I didn't ever really meet them because her mum died when she was really young. But they were actually all music hall stars. And they worked with like people like Laurel and Hardy. My nan sang on stage with Judy Garland as a chorus girl. Like, they're all really musical, but I never met them because they had all passed on by the time, you know, I came into existence. So maybe it's like, I don't know if it's a genetic thing. I don't know if I'm just making up science now.
Well, it could be.
But anyway, neither of my parents are musical, but they both love music. So I guess somewhere along the line, it just got passed to me.
Yeah, I was similar. My dad was very musical when he was young in the Canary Islands. But then he found religion and became quite anti-musical for a long time. He's like into music now again, but he kind of didn't really like me listening to music for a while. But they did like cooking, which meant that I didn't get into cooking or food for a very long time because it was kind of forced upon me from a very young age.
Okay.
So I'd try and run upstairs and listen to music.
But there's so much good food in the Canary Islands.
Oh, I know, right? I know. But, well, we moved to England because my dad's got vitiligo. I think it's pronounced vitiligo or something like that. It's a skin condition where he's got no pigmentation on his skin and the sun hurts him.
I know
so
what you
mean.
So
we moved to the UK. Yeah, we moved to the UK and didn't have the good food when I was growing up. Unfortunately.
I went to the Canaries, I think I told you last year.
Yeah, I saw the
and
photos.
I was really amazed at seeing bananas grow. That's how, like, such a sheltered Plymouth-born life I've led. I was like, oh my God, it's bananas. And then I saw, like, lemons and oranges, and it was just all go from there.
Yeah, there's avocado plantations on La Palma as well, which are
I saw those, yeah. And loads of fruit that I didn't know what it was or recognize.
Yeah. The spiky figs that you took the photo of are a funny one because every time I say to someone, yeah, there's spiky figs, people are like, what are those? They're not figs.
Yeah. But I kept asking that because my Spanish friends were like, it's a fig, but it's not a fig. And I was like, this isn't any kind of fig. And they're like, no, it's a fig. But anyway, prickly pears, as I got to the bottom of it.
Prickly pears. Yeah, I think that's the one. And it's funny, when my dad was growing up in the Canary Islands, it was under Franco's regime.
Yeah.
And the plantations where they grew all this stuff were so big that they used to overflow onto the road. And my parents would go and pick them up off the road. And if the policeman came, they'd have to like run away because the policeman would chase them to beat them because of stealing fruit.
Yeah.
But they used to go with cars sometimes and just fill the boot of the car up with avocados and bananas for free off the side of the road.
That's amazing. And they taste so much better as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We found that in Asia as well. The fruit is so fresh that it tastes incredible. And even things that I don't normally like I'm not a big fan of pineapple normally, but over there it just tastes completely different. It's like,
and they incredible. Grow really funny as well, don't they? Pineapples grow like in the ground.
I know. They look adorable. They look like a little Pokemon, I always say. They're pretty cool. So how did Wild Thyme Whole Foods come about? How did that all start up?
I actually joined before we opened the shop, but after the group was already established. So in Portsmouth, there was a group, I'm not sure how many there were to begin with, but there was a group of people that wanted to open a whole food cooperative. Several of them had worked at a whole food cooperative in Cambridge and, you know, were keen to kind of replicate that idea in Portsmouth. And I had seen them at like a few events around Portsmouth, just, you know, selling, doing a small store, selling some vegan cake and things like that. And then I guess like a couple of members had left, had moved on, and they were asking for more people to join the cooperative. And it just so happened that it was at a time when I kind of like wasn't really sure what to do. I'd left a career job because I knew that I didn't want to do that, but kind of really hadn't quite figured out what it was I actually wanted to do. And then that came along, mm-hmm. and I was like, this is the most perfect thing, because I've always wanted to be part of a cooperative. I just never really thought that was possible in Portsmouth because there wasn't any. And so I ended up joining. And then I think about 6 or 7 months after I joined, we opened the shop. And that was almost 4 years ago. It'll be 4 years in May that we opened it.
That must have been pretty full on, the experience of actually getting the shop opened up.
Yes, it was. When we took it over, it was a beauty salon.
Oh, wow.
And obviously to make things a bit cheaper for us, we had like a really great builder, but we did a lot of the labor and work ourselves. So it was like all sectioned off into these weird like treatment rooms where it's like knock all that down, pull all the ceiling down, like build everything else. I probably wasn't the most helpful during building because I'm dyspraxic as well. So I'm really clumsy. But you know, I did my bit.
extra hands are always useful though. Everyone yeah. can be useful. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what was it that originally like got you interested in being involved in a co-op specifically?
I think because like obviously like politically it aligns with my view of the world or how the world should be, but also I'd been part of cooperatives previously. So in my time in Plymouth, there's the Plymouth Musicians Cooperative, which is a cooperatively run rehearsal room, music studio, and other kind of musical services. And I had joined as a director of that for a short time. Then when I lived in Brighton, I suppose also touring with No Comply and going across all these venues in the UK and Europe, and just you could always tell when something was a co-op, like the feel and the welcome of it was just so amazing. And the way that everybody worked together communally, and how much they looked after you, appreciated you and respected you. And then going to volunteer at the Cowley Club when I lived in Brighton, which, you know, I just thought that place was amazing, especially for me coming from Plymouth and not having anything like that. Well, we had the Plymouth Musicians Cooperative, but politically not having anything like that. I just kind of felt like everything came together a little bit when I was like, oh wow, there are places like this, and they do amazing things. And so that's kind of like my previous positive experience with cooperatives and the way they worked just really appealed to me.
That's amazing. And do you think that that all stemmed from music? Because for me, I kind of got interested in politics absolutely through reading a lot of what musicians were talking about. Was it the same for yourself?
I think my mum is very politically active. So I think regardless of music, that was always going to have been instilled in me. My mum raised me reading like a lot of black feminist literature and getting involved in politics. And I think music probably brought out a little bit of a different side of that for me, like especially with, I think, veganism and animal rights and that sort of stuff. I don't think I would have necessarily approached that without music, but I think it was kind of always a given that I was going to be politically active in some way.
Ah, that's amazing. That's amazing. No, it was the opposite for me. My parents, when they became religious, specifically my dad, part of that was viewing politics like the devil's work. They didn't want anything to do with politics. Yeah. Fortunately, they did teach me to be very respectful of other people's points of view, which yeah. meant that I had the right conversations with the right people to get me interested in politics myself. So that was useful, but it's very different.
So yeah. What was the band for you that kind of really brought that out and you started thinking about things a bit more.
So for me, as opposed to it being a big band, it was... So I got my start in music was extremely cheesy. I was into Backstreet Boys way before I was into anything that was remotely cool in any way whatsoever. But there was one Jehovah's Witness who was really into punk rock and just rock music. And he managed to convince my parents to let me go to a Foo Fighters gig with him when I was like 15, maybe. Yeah. And on the way up, he played like all the obvious records that now are really cringy, but at the time were great, like the Vandals and the Distillers, and we played a lot of No Doubt as well at the time, all those kind of bands. But it was more the conversations I was then having with local small bands I was going to watch that opened me up to politics for sure, especially after September the 11th, where everyone was talking about things at school, and yeah. I found it very much divided itself into people either repeating things that they saw on the news, which from being brought up in religion, I didn't really believe, and people sort of talking a bit more about what was actually going on and treating people with respect. And that's what really caught my attention.
Yeah. And there used to be a lot of things at gigs, like, I don't see it so much anymore, but there used to be at gigs when you went to the merch table, there would be like loads of literature and leaflets and stuff about, you know, I don't know, about all manner of things. But you don't see that so much anymore, I don't think. I guess because everything's so freely accessible on the internet that maybe there's not as much need for the written word kind of activism, maybe.
Yeah, it's a funny one.
Printed word, I would say.
It's a funny one. It's something that I feel quite strongly about. And I think that there's a lot of bands doing a way better job of this in the last 2 or 3 years than there was before. Like, I think a lot of bands are trying really hard to be talking about important issues. But I expected a lot of flyers and a lot of people talking about, like, for example, Brexit, even when that was coming out at punk shows. Because it just seems inherently part of what the punk community should be talking about. But I guess, yeah, people are maybe bored of reading it on their mobiles all day, so they don't want to write about it and put it on a merch stand anymore.
Yeah, they want a bit of escapism.
Absolutely, absolutely. So within politics, I know that you're co-chair for the Kurdistan Solidarity. For Portsmouth, is that right?
Yeah, for Portsmouth branch, yeah.
Because I've been trying to research it as much as I can. But I think part of what I want the podcast to be about isn't just promoting the art that people are doing and the music people are making, but also important issues that they're interested in and involved in. And this is something I think a lot of people maybe don't know very much about. So... do you think you'd be up for maybe like explaining it a bit to me and to anyone who might be listening so that people can get involved?
Yeah, okay. So from our point of view, from the Kurdistan Solidarity Portsmouth, kind of there's two levels to what we do, and that's to support the local Kurdish community here, and to, you know, try and involve everyone with events and activities that are happening in Portsmouth, but also supporting the kind of the revolution in Rojava, which is kind of like it's like the only real women-led revolution that we've seen globally, and it's where kind of women come first. It's not a case of we're going to have a revolution and then hopefully, I'm kind of paraphrasing someone else who's quite inspirational, but basically. Saying, you know, we're going to have a revolution and then maybe after we can look at women's rights and equality and all this sort of stuff. Actually, that's at the forefront of this revolution. So, you know, as a feminist, I feel that it's really, really important that we have international support for the revolution there. And it's really the way that we have the Kurdistan Solidarity set up here is that I am the co-chair because in Rojava, they have that. There's a man and a woman who co-chair every kind of spot on the I think I will call them councils, but on the councils there. So we wanted to emulate that what they're doing in Rojava with our local branch as well. So I co-chair with my Kurdish friend Bavil, who kind of founded the Kurdistan Solidarity Portsmouth. And we've done some activities, so protests to kind of raise awareness of what's happening in Kurdistan, especially when Turkey were invading Afrin. And obviously, you know, campaigning for Anna Campbell's body to be returned to the UK as well. And doing, you know, things like film nights, music nights with international performers and Kurdish performers. And not entirely sure what we've got lined up for this year at the moment, but we're kind of working on it, work in progress still.
Of course, yeah. And part of what I wanted to ask is what was happening with Twitter and Facebook, because it's almost like they've been involved in trying to censor what's actually going on, right?
Yeah. So what happened with me on Facebook, I got banned from Facebook constantly, was because our Kurdistan Solidarity campaign had support for Öcalan. So Öcalan was the leader of the PKK who's been imprisoned in Turkey for, I think it's, almost, I have like a terrible memory for like dates and names and things like that, but I think it's about 20 years. And for the last 2 years, he's been in complete solitary confinement, so he's not even allowed to see his family. A few weeks ago, like his brother was allowed to see him, which was like the first time in over 2 years that he'd seen family members. However, under pressure of the Turkish government, Facebook will remove anything that's kind of pro Öcalan or in support of Öcalan and ban the members. And I believe you'd like, there's plenty of news articles about it and they explain everything way more articulately than I ever could. But I believe that there was some kind of threat from the Turkish government that they would remove Facebook in Turkey unless Facebook adhered to some of their requests about, silencing the voice of Rojava and Öcalan supporters. And there was a real interesting case of a Scottish schoolgirl, Kurdish descent, who got banned from Twitter for raising money and supporting a movement in Kurdistan. And there's some great news articles about that, so I recommend googling or visiting my Twitter, where I've put links up. Twitter haven't banned me yet, but Facebook, I've just given up, I'm not even on there anymore.
Yeah, I've got a few of the articles that you've linked to on your Twitter, so I'll link to them in the description as well. And that's what I'm hoping is that people will want to go and read more about this, because it's one of the things that I realized whilst traveling and talking to people from different countries. It's very easy to get caught up in what's going on locally and forget everything else about all our friends who have relatives in other countries, or all the people around the world who are going through different things. And we'd be talking to people about Brexit as if it was this huge deal. And then our friends in South Africa, for example, would start talking about what's going on there. And you'd be like, it's just shocking to think that it's not constantly on the news and on our Twitter feeds and on our Facebook feeds. So it's important to touch on these subjects and read up on them and be aware of what's going on.
Absolutely. And the other thing linking back to co-ops as well, in Rojava, lots of things are set up communally, so that the kind of like people, no one like owns anything. The community owns it. So in some ways, it's basically like a network of co-ops all across the region, which I find absolutely incredible. But also, we have, like, I think that it has to be mindful that a lot of people, the whole region and the politics of the region is very anti-capitalist. So it doesn't really serve, I guess, like the media or whatever to really promote and publicize what's happening there. Because it's one of those things where you're like, well, actually, you know, this region can do it and they can live like this and they can live communally. It can work. Because I guess other people get ideas then, don't they?
Well, yeah, but that's why it's such an important example for people to be reading about. You know, so many times I talk to people about the idea of revolution or any other concept like communism or anything like that, and people always think of it as failed concepts that don't work. and they never think of it as things that need working on in order to actually be effective. And the example you're giving of actually having a man and a woman involved in their decision making from the get go is something that people don't even think about. They just sort of lay things off as ineffective and stick to things that clearly are not working at all. And that seems ludicrous to me.
Yeah, and also, you know, the fact that people aren't questioning that communism isn't working, and capitalism isn't working.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you look around us right now and look around the world and what's happening and how people are suffering and how people, you know, die as a result of wealth inequality, capitalism isn't working. But it's a case of we can look at all these other political ideals and be like, well, that didn't work, or that would never work. But what we're living through isn't working. It's working for some people, but for the vast majority of people globally, it's not.
Absolutely. It's people have 100% been suckered into this idea of having to stick with what they've got, and they don't want to consider other options. And I find it very strange that you talk to people who really disagree and are very angry at what's going on, say, with Trump in the United States. But the idea of in some way standing up against that and being like, no, this is not okay, I'm going to do something, seems to them to be on another planet. It seems impossible to do. They have to stick there and just go along with what's going because it's the law. And that concept of just having to stand by and let injustices happen because it's the law, to me just seems very close to, for example, not helping the Jewish community in Nazi Germany just because it's the law. There's really no difference in it to me.
Yeah.
So that was a very intense subject straight away within the conversation, right? Nice and easy start into the conversation, get straight involved in politics.
Which fix the problems of the world. Let's talk about food.
absolutely. So I was going to talk to you about food because I want you to help me give some advice to anyone who listens about eating healthy whilst on tour. It's totally one of the hardest things. Is it possible? Is it impossible? What do you think?
Yes, it is possible, but the will has to be strong because I'm probably a bad person to ask, because when I spent in my early to mid 20s, I spent obviously a vast amount of my life on tour. And especially when I first went vegan as well, I probably lived off crisp sandwiches on tour. However, through my wizened years, I have learned that it is possible, really. And especially now, obviously, given that supermarkets and places like that have such a better range of food that's kind of like accessible and affordable. Not that I, you know, recommend to everyone shop at supermarkets all the time. However, when you're on tour, you know, it is the convenience of it, isn't it? That, you know, you finish a gig at 11 p.m. and something would still be open afterwards to get stuff in the morning or whatever. But it is just a case of trying to find the healthiest options to kind of take with you in the van. And then I don't know, it's tough if the promoter is providing a meal. I guess you're just kind of at their mercy, really, aren't you? Because it's just nice of them to feed you.
Yeah, obviously, and you're trying to save money. I think if the meal's provided for you, you just get on with it and you count it as a blessing.
Yeah,
absolutely. But I think for me, the hardest thing is remembering at the start of the tour to not get overexcited and just stock up on beers, but to actually get some healthy snacks. Because otherwise, after your two beers in, it's all fair game and you just want to have as many crisps as possible.
Yeah. Just avocados. Sorry if anyone doesn't like avocados.
No, that's my, I've figured out that for breakfast, because I'm trying to cut out a lot of bread at the moment because it really hurts me. So I've been trying to figure out what I like for breakfast, and it's both green. It's avocados and kiwis. Those are my go-to things for breakfast.
Are you had to have a gluten intolerance?
I need to actually go and figure out what is going on. But all I've noticed is that if I do eat a lot of bread, I get really bad stomach aches afterwards. So until I go get it checked out, yeah. I've just been trying to eat less bread. But my sister's just had to go get checked for gluten intolerance. So it's quite likely that, that it's something related.
So, yeah, definitely try some kind of like buckwheat pancakes or something like that for breakfast.
Yeah, absolutely. I need to figure out some alternatives. Even sourdough bread doesn't hurt as much.
Yeah, lots of people have said that actually, that feel they have like a gluten or wheat intolerance, they seem fine with sourdough bread, or like rye bread, I guess.
Yeah, I should try rye bread too. Absolutely.
Which is, if you're touring in Germany, is like, that is a surefire way to stay healthy, is just eat up some rye bread and vegetables.
Yeah.
Well, because they're really good at that.
Germany was so good for food when we were there, because the promoters just gave us so much food from the local markets to take back with us. It was ridiculous. We were well stocked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, very well looked after.
And I think as well, like when you're staying at someone's house, they're normally like, especially if you offer to make them breakfast as well, they're normally more than happy to kind of hand over their kitchen.
That's a good tip. I hadn't thought of that.
Make up a nice meal. No one's going to turn down free food. Like, if someone stays at my house and they want to make me breakfast, they're like my best friend.
I always overthink things too much when I'm staying around someone else's house, and I have all these great ideas of things I should offer to do, and then I just feel really awkward and just kind of sit there and say thank you to everything. But no, that's a good idea. Offer to make breakfast, and then and then you're in control. That's a good one. What do you normally go for if you're making breakfast?
Like if I'm making for like more than just myself, I'm probably going for some kind of like scrambled tofu. I really like it, you know, like when you chop up tomatoes with olive oil, salt, pepper, lemon, and coriander.
Yeah.
And they have that, like you can have that on toast or whatever. Like that's just so great, and it goes really well with like scrambled tofu and avocado and that sort of thing. But I skip breakfast a lot when I'm on my own, because I do intermittent fasting, or try to, as much as possible. For no other reason than it helps my energy levels during the day. I've just found that I used to get really sleepy in the afternoons, and the shop is such physical work. It's like lifting boxes, doing deliveries, being on your feet all day, like cooking loads of food in the kitchen. Like it's very, very active. And I just found that I was getting really tired in the afternoons. And I tried intermittent fasting because my partner was doing it. And it just, if I don't eat until, I don't know, like 11, 12 o'clock, my energy levels just stay a lot more consistent throughout the day. So different things work for different people. I'm not saying everyone should do it, but.
No, that's amazing. Because I definitely suffer from a lack of energy in the afternoons at times as well. And but do you not suffer from fatigue if you don't eat that long? Or did that, like, does that go away after a while?
No, absolutely not. Like the whole kind of like theory behind it is that it takes 12 hours for your body to digest. So if you don't eat for 16 hours, you're given, it could be anywhere really from 14 to 16. But if you have a period of your body's going through a period of non-digestion, you're actually giving it a rest. So it's kind of almost the opposite.
Okay, and I'm guessing that's like no coffee or anything.
Well, there's two different schools of thought on that, because there's kind of the fast where you would have no coffee or herbal tea. It would literally just be water, and that's considered like a pure fast. But then if it's, you know, there are other people that would have coffee or herbal tea during that time. I think it's just a case of figuring out what works best for you, but probably in terms of your internal organs and stuff, it would be better to just have water and not coffee. I love coffee though, so it doesn't go well for me. I like a black coffee in the morning.
Okay, well, I might have to give that a go, and I will let you know how it gets on.
Okay.
Goes on. Yeah, I'm not sure if I can handle not eating. Like, I might be able to handle it in terms of physically, but I might be really annoying to my partner, Jane. She might be really annoyed at me because I might get really grouchy and just not be the nicest person to be around.
Yeah, but I'm sure that some people do, but I get really productive and I get real clarity of thought.
Oh, well, see, yeah, that would fix a lot of issues for me, so that would be great.
Yeah, I'm terrible at making decisions and things like that, but I do seem to achieve more mental clarity when I've been fasting.
Ah, okay. Well, I mean, it's definitely got to be better than eating some fatty foods. You know, like there's times where I have a meal, especially if I go out and I've chosen badly in a rush, and I'll have two bites and instantly know I'm going to be really sleepy and regret it like straight away afterwards. It's the worst feeling.
Sometimes it's worth that though, isn't it? You gotta weigh it up.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm really going to enjoy this, but I'll feel really sleepy later. I'm okay with it.
I always have it with like Jane loves chips, and
me too.
I love chips, but I like thin chips. Like I call them like Spanish fries. They're really really skinny.
But
The like the fat sort of fish and chips type English chips, the really thick ones. And if I have too many of those, I know I'm going to fall asleep within like 5 to 10 minutes afterwards. There's no chance.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one.
You need to find a happy medium.
I know,
the straight cut chip.
Yeah.
Or the curly fry.
The curly fry is a good one, the curly fry. Although I'm a big fan of smiley faces. I'm a big advocate for people.
Oh, no, I don't like faces. I like hash browns, but I don't like them.
Hash browns win every time. Hash browns do win.
I was reading something on Twitter the other day which was like about how it's a rite of passage into veganism to discover the hash brown sandwich. Carb on carb sandwich.
I saw Beelzebub posted in Brighton that they had, I think it's a baked bean patty and hash brown burger, but with crumpets as buns. And it sounds like the most incredible thing for, I'm sure that like that will convert like people into veganism because it sounds like incredible. But yeah, I went in Asia, I'd go in every country trying to find hash browns because they're one of my favorite things. And I got here to Spain, and this morning we went out trying to find breakfast, and I forgot that it's not really done in Spain, the hash brown. So I came back disappointed.
Oh, like, gonna have to make your own.
Yeah, I do like making hash browns, but we're staying in a shared Airbnb, so it's not the best place to cook here, unfortunately. But I'm looking forward to being back in the UK and having kitchens that I can start cooking in.
Yeah, I went to Madrid recently, and I found it really strange because, like, I can't remember what the supermarket is called, like one of the kind of like big Spanish supermarkets, but they had like this like massive amount of like vegetarian, like seitan based food. All of it had egg in. So my friend that could speak Spanish was like, no, that means egg. No, you can't have that. That means milk. Like, and I was like, but all of this stuff is incredible. Like, they've got this huge section of it, but just not, like, there's like one or two things actually that didn't have egg in.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't been to Madrid, but in Barcelona, there's quite a good vegan scene. Just because Jane and me like love food, we've discovered all of them, and every time we've got friends over, it's quite nice being able to actually go to places that you know they're going to enjoy the options, and that you know that it's actually not just restaurants that have a vegan or vegetarian option, if you know what I mean, but that actually put a lot of effort into making nice meals.
And you've got all these nice organic shops as well in Barcelona, isn't there?
Well, that's the thing, that most of the time I just like inviting people around for dinner because I enjoy cooking vegan, I enjoy cooking vegetarian, I love the challenge of it, and I just love talking to people about ways of being creative with it as well. I think that it's the best way of getting people interested in the ethics behind it is to get people interested in the food as well, because England has a bit of a lack of culture sometimes of teaching kids from a young age to cook different meals.
Yeah.
And in Spain, you get taught to be in the kitchen from a very young age. So I think if you love food, it's easier to come up with good ideas that make the transition easier as well.
Yeah. And also, there's not a big social culture around eating in the UK, which I'm really guilty of as well, because like I don't like sharing food. I like my plate of food. This is my plate of food. No one else is touching it. It's mine, and I don't have to like worry that someone's going to nick my food. I was an only child as well, so it's not even like I had like a bad experience with siblings.
No, I get really awkward when we go to restaurants, and sometimes Jane will say, do you want to get two plates and share them? And I'm like, not really, because I know what I want to order and I know I'll like it, but I'm not sure if I like what you're having. And then I've got to have half of it. So before we start sort of wrapping things up, we should come full circle and just talk a bit about what you're doing music-wise, because that's obviously the reason I got to know you in the first place, was through your solo stuff, the Kelly Kemp stuff. Specifically, Come Back was a record that we play a lot and that we absolutely love. But you're still doing solo shows at the moment, aren't you?
Ish. Like, if someone I like asks me, then I will.
Excellent. That's still good enough.
But I'm not actively kind of trying to, you know, book gigs and stuff like I'm so, there's a few reasons for it, is that when I was doing the record, when the record came out, like I said earlier, like I spent years and years of my life on tour, and I feel kind of like I really envy people that are like, this is what I want to do with my life and I'm going to go at it, you know, 100%. But I'm much more of a person that I want different experiences in life. Like I want to try, I want to try a bit, but I'm quite fickle by nature anyway. But, you know, I want to be a part of so many different things and experience so many different things that kind of not like music isn't my main thing, and I feel like I've explored and done a lot of what I want to do with music on a gig level, perhaps not on a writing level. And I was playing gigs when Come Back came out, and I just really didn't enjoy it. And I thought, why am I doing something that actually is not giving me much happiness? So I kind of knocked it on the head a little bit. And like I said, like if people I like ask me to go and play a show, then I like them and they're my friends and I'll do it. But what I have been doing, and this is the exciting bit for me, is playing in a band called the Hip Eyes, where I play electric guitar and sing, and doing gigs with that makes me very happy. So I much would prefer to play with the band than play solo at the moment. It might change in the future, I don't know, but at the moment, like, that's what gives me a lot of joy. And we have a record coming out. So it's just kind of being mastered at the moment, like our first album. So we're just kind of waiting for that. And then hopefully we'll release that soon, within the next few months, and play some more gigs in April.
Amazing. I was literally listening to I Just Want to Float in the Void before we had the call, and it's absolutely amazing, and I'll again link to it so everyone can check it out, and I'm excited for the album. When does that look like it's going to be coming out then?
I'm not sure. Kind of haven't quite decided what we want to do with it and how we want to do it, but we've got some ideas. We just need to kind of cement it, but I don't think it will be long before it comes out, and I'll send you a secret
advanced
link. I'm really excited about it. I'm not like a person that bigs myself up a lot, but I think it's really good.
I'm sure it is. No, you should big it up. Was it recorded
my partner Ben, who plays bass, he's made the most incredible video, which
nice.
I don't know if everyone else is going to appreciate it, but I cried when I watched it. It's my favourite thing in the world.
excited. Was it recorded by Rue again, the record?
No, it was recorded at South Sea Sound Studio.
Oh, nice.
In Portsmouth.
Nice.
By
yes.
Tim and Elle, who own the studio, are like our really good friends, and Ben works at the studio like one day a week as well. So yeah, it's got such a, I'm going to say this word wrong, familial feel, because Ben, familial because Ben and Rue are brothers, and obviously like Elle and Tim are like my family, and yeah, so it's all kind of, it's all just been like a really good experience. Of just, yeah, and like Mark's kids came into the studio as well when we were recording. Just, you know, it just feels really
nice.
Healthy and positive.
That sounds amazing. I've been in touch with them.
Although I'm sure that I got in some grunts.
That always happens,
so it's not...
Recording without getting annoyed at some point isn't really recording though, is it?
Yeah, it was hard as well because Wild Thyme had just done a stall at a local festival here. It's like Victorious Festival. It's like a really big festival down on the seafront. And we had a stall there, which we do normally every year, but it's like really hard work. So it's like, you know, like 14-hour days or whatever. And then the second day of the festival, like everybody's like, what do you call that tent thing that goes over stalls?
Canopy?
Is that what it's called? They all started blowing away. So I was like out in the rain, like pouring down with rain, like 50 mile an hour wind, like trying to help all these people, like get all their stuff back to their cars because everything was blowing away. And then like, I gave up on the festival. I was like, this is not happening today. I'm going to go up to the studio and see where they're up to, because I was going to record the next day. And they somehow just roped me into like recording on my guitar that day. And I was I'm so tired. But I think that worked well because I think I'm like really susceptible when I'm tired. So I just like, do it again. Okay,
fine.
I don't like to fight.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, I'm really excited to get that out and to listen to it, because I love bands that come out that don't sound like everything else that's out there, and I think the Hip Eyes definitely don't. It's got a very rock and roll vibe that I absolutely love to it, that not a lot of bands have got.
Yeah, my favorite bands in the world are Pavement, and it's like the only band where I felt I could channel my inner Pavement vibe.
Nice. Well, I'm really excited for it, Kelly. Thank you so much for chatting to me today. It's been absolutely great.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on.
Before we go, is there any bands that you'd like people to check out? Any artists that you'd like people to go look at? Any shout outs you want to give at all?
I don't know. Like definitely in South Sea Sound Studio, Elle Morgan's been recording her album with her band The Divers. So Elle Morgan and The Divers. So yeah, I guess look out for that, because that's going to come out and it's going to be really incredible. I don't listen to a lot of band music. I like a lot of hip hop, but I probably won't give any shout outs because my taste in music is really embarrassing. really enjoyed Culture of Youth though. Last year, it's 2019 now. I went to see them a few times and I just think they are a really, really great band.
I can definitely vouch for Elle Morgan. I'm really excited about new music from her, and I actually need to go listen to Culture Abuse, because I haven't actually checked them out yet, which is embarrassing.
Oh, you're gonna love it, definitely.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think it'll really be up your street.
Perfect.
And they're just a really great band. I went to watch Drug Church last night, actually. I'm feeling a little bit worse for wear today.
the Drug Church album and the Self Defense Family albums were ones that I really liked last year. Very different vibes, but I really enjoyed those.
Yeah, no, I think they're touring the UK at the moment, and they were great. They were really good.
Ah, excellent. Well, that's going on my list to listen to straight after the show then. Well, thanks a lot, Kelly. And hopefully I will see you in Portsmouth at some point this year, because that would be cool to catch up face-to-face.
Don't forget the cat pics.
Yeah, of course. Lots of pet pics coming up, for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you very much. I'm going to hit stop recording now. I hope you really enjoyed that episode. For me, it was an absolute pleasure getting to chat to Kelly Kemp. I absolutely love everything she gets up to. And I think that a lot of the stuff that we talked about is really valuable and exactly the kind of conversations that I really want to be having on the podcast. If you did enjoy the episode, please, please subscribe. We've got some more great guests coming up. Give us a like. Give us a rating if you're on iTunes, as that really helps us out. And I will catch you next time.